Today, the bank of Mum and Dad is getting strangled. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I've noticed posts covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, there was an interesting article published last week by John Collett in WA Today and all the other papers in the same stable. Essentially, it was based around the fact that, according to my research, the bank of Mum and Dad is still supporting people to buy their first home. In fact, the average amount is close to $100,000. And that, of course, is a bit of a concern. As I've been discussing recently, there is definitely an easing of momentum, specifically around first-time buyers, and yet a lot of them still require the help of Bank of Mum and Dad to be able to actually get into the market. So I thought I'd just explore those statistics in a bit more detail, because there is more going on below the waterline than may first appear. And to start with, let's just remind ourselves that the new loan commitments to owner-occupied first home buyers has dropped dramatically. This is the most recent statistics from the ABS. And at their peak, the most recent peak, we were seeing somewhere between 16,000 and 17,000 new commitments made each month. That's now dropped back down to 10,000 and looks to be continuing to fall. Now, of course, there is a significant reason why that's the case, because you must remember that not long ago, there were government schemes galore, both state and federal, to try and pull forward people into the market to essentially prop up the economy. So that peak was artificially created. So the obvious question, once you see that peak, is, well, what then happened with regard to the bank of Mum and Dad? So I've updated my modelling. This is based on my surveys, of course, specifically looking at the bank of Mum and Dad. Now, let me just be clear on the definition. The bank of Mum and Dad is where kids are effectively supported by their parents to be able to enter the market. And that support can come in a number of ways, everything from a gift of a certain amount of money to a loan, either with no interest or at a preferential interest rate, or indeed some other terms of support, which could include things like paying for childcare or indeed even paying part of the mortgage. Now, I'm going to focus in on the cash transfer or loan transfer part of the story here, because it is substantially the most significant. And as you'll see, there is some very important data coming out now, which suggests that things are not necessarily all well. So let's just start by looking at the number of first-time buyers which have been supported. Now, this is actually shown on a quarterly basis, and you can see there that there was a peak back in June 2021 that coincides with the peak in terms of the new first-time buyers. And it's dropped back dramatically to around 15,000 over the last quarter. So a considerable reduction. Another way of looking at it is the percentage of first-time buyers who are seeking help from the bank of Mum and Dad. And interestingly, that has hardly changed. It's still just below 60%, actually 57.6% of those seeking to get into the market are still looking for the bank of Mum and Dad to assist. And this, of course, underscores once again the pressures on the market, and particularly the pressures on first-time buyers, because housing is very expensive, and even with interest rates very, very low, a lot of people find it very difficult in terms of first saving for a deposit, and then secondly, making the monthly repayments. Actually, the deposit is probably the biggest problem, because with interest rates so low and with incomes not growing while cost of living are, it is ever more difficult to construct a deposit, hence the use of the bank of Mum and Dad. Now, the next question then is, well, so what is the average help? And last time I ran the model, the average contribution made from the bank of mum and dad reached an all-time high of $99,388, pretty much $100,000. Now, I should add that there are variations across the states. So, for example, the average amounts are much higher in New South Wales and Victoria, partly because house prices are so high, although they are also rising in places like Adelaide, Hobart, again, linked to very high house prices. But I'd also make the point that there are considerable variations. So there are some parents who are handing over $200,000 or $300,000. Others, much less. But of course, you have to slice the data somewhere. So I've given you there the average across Australia, which gives you the reasonable sense that whilst back in March 2010, the average contribution was just over $20,000, now it's close to $100,000. And one of the interesting questions you should ask yourself is, well, how are those families getting the money? Well, in some cases, of course, they have plenty of savings. In other cases, though, what they're doing is refinancing their own mortgage thanks to the rise in equity. They've got headroom, and so they're pulling out equity and handing it down to the next generation. Now, of course, that's great if you are a first-time buyer with parents who have equity that they can pass down. But if you haven't got those sorts of parents, and if those parents indeed are perhaps renting, then you don't stand much chance of getting back into the market. So you can see here the intergenerational impact of this particular trend. Now, there's another factor to bear in mind too, and that is, if you look carefully at the default data, in the subsequent 3 to 5 years, following the help from the bank of mum and dad, actually, kids who get the help but don't do the saving, don't do the hard yards, are 3 times more likely to default because they don't have the financial discipline of saving. And that's a problem. Now, there are a couple of other important points to make. One of the main reasons why the bank of mum and dad often makes a payment is to ensure that the kids don't have to pay for lender's mortgage insurance. The premiums for lender's mortgage insurance are pretty exorbitant, as I've discussed in another post. And of course, if you then transfer your property or mortgage, you may have to forego those costs. So avoiding lender's mortgage insurance is definitely one of the main issues that comes up when talking about the bank of mum and dad. The other point I want to make is that some lenders really don't ask the right questions about how those prospective buyers have saved for the deposit. There is a fundamental difference between a proof of savings over time versus a single payment that just lands in the account conveniently and allows the deposit to be paid. The issue is, of course, here that the former shows real control of your finances, the latter doesn't at all. And yet, in my observations, it seems quite often banks don't ask the right questions, they take it at face value and don't really delve into the underlying drivers of how that deposit was created. And as I said before, one of the risks is there's a high level of default if, in fact, you just got a single payment from the bank of mum and dad and then bought a property without the discipline of savings. And the other point I want to make here is that there are alternatives. For example, the government schemes, which of course are limited in number, but also are limited in the agreement that is put in place and the flexibility or inflexibility you have later. So in fact, using the bank of mum and dad can be a more flexible way to get into the market compared with some of the government-backed schemes. And by the way, with a bigger deposit, you can often negotiate a better interest rate on that mortgage, so your monthly repayments will also be lower. So there are a number of reasons why it is that a bigger deposit does make a lot of sense, hence the use of the bank of mum and dad. And yet, there are also a number of downsides. There's another problem too, and that is that if we are now going through a cycle where interest rates are going to rise and potentially property prices could slide back, we wonder whether parents who've actually tapped into their own equity might find themselves rather embarrassed when their value goes down. In some cases, that could lead to negative equity, of course. And, of course, also, the kids may be in the same situation. If they're buying in now, at the peak of the market, they could well risk going into negative equity, and that's a problem. There's another issue, too. Quite often, it is not totally clear the basis on which money is handed down. Is it a loan? Is it a gift? Is it being charged with interest or not? And under what circumstances will the money be repaid? Quite a few people that we survey who've accessed the bank of mum and dad do not have a clear agreement, neither legal or just spoken agreement, as to the basis on which money has been handed across. And there's another question too. What happens if you've got a number of kids? Will they all be queuing up to get the same? So how about equity amongst different members of the family? By the way, that often leads to squabbles later, particularly around wills and all of those sorts of things, which can lead into very dark places. And there's another question too. What happens if you pass money down to the kids and they buy a property, but then that relationship blows up and then they have to deal with a separation? How does that play out with the bank of mum and dad? So you can see that there are lots and lots of questions here. And my observation generally is that a lot of people have piled into the bank of mum and dad without necessarily thinking through a lot of these issues, which again is a problem. Now, just going back to the macro picture, it's also worth understanding where the bank of mum and dad sits now on the relative scale amongst the other lenders. And so what I've done here is I've taken the latest information from APRA to February, just updated it in fact, and now the bank of mum and dad at $39 billion estimated total outstanding with them is the 10th largest lender. Interestingly, there's been a slight change insofar that the Bank of Queensland and ME Bank merged, and that moved them up the scale. Previously, the Bank of Queensland was smaller than the Bank of Mum and Dad. So you can see here that the Bank of Mum and Dad has a very sizable influence on the housing market and the amount of debt outstanding. But of course, it's not reported in any of the normal statistics because it's not the same as an external lender. But that debt sits somewhere. And in some cases, what it means is that the parents have a bigger mortgage than they might otherwise have. And that begs the question also, what happens as interest rates go up? Will they be able to service that mortgage appropriately? Or could it be the case that the bank of mum and dad is now getting itself into difficulty as interest rates rise? We'll have to see how this plays out, but I'll be monitoring carefully how the average amount and what proportion of first-time buyers commit via the bank of mum and dad ahead. I think we may see some changes. But if you are somebody who is thinking about getting involved with the bank of mum and dad as a provider of funds, it's very important to think about how you structure it and making clear the basis on which you're making the loan or gift, how it's going to be repaid, if it's going to be repaid, when it's going to be repaid. And if you are somebody who's tapping into the bank of mum and dad to get that first property, ask yourself the question also about, are you sure that you can manage your finances appropriately? And are you clear also the basis on which the money has been paid across? Because there's a little annoying note in my surveys where there's a gap between what the parents think and what the offspring think. The former quite often expect to get paid back at some point in the future. The latter perhaps are a little more sanguine about the money coming across, saying, well, they can afford it and maybe we just won't pay it back. So the bottom line is this: the bank of mum and dad is not necessarily a free ride into the market. There are consequences. And I'm concerned about the intergenerational bind that's been created here. This is created by prices being too high relative to income. This is created by 20 to 30 years of bad policy. But it's spilling over now into both those providing funds via the bank of mum and dad and those who take the benefit of those funds. I think this is going to be something to watch very carefully as the property market morphs, as interest rates rise, and as, frankly, things get ever more uncertain. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.